20 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. CBS News is told by a law enforcement source that at least one person has died in shootings on the Michigan State University campus in East Lansing. It's unclear if it was a student or faculty member or other individual. Police say several people have been wounded and they are being taken to a hospital. WWJ's Aaron V reports.
Earlier this evening, it started out with a tweet from MSU Police and Public Safety saying that there was reported active shooter situation taking place on campus near the Berkeley Hall, and that the next situation was that the active shooter was on foot on the campus walking about. They were asking all of the students to and staff members, anyone on campus, to shelter in place. And as the situation developed throughout the evening, now they're asking everybody on campus and immediately off campus to continue to shelter in place, as this is an active situation. Police are already swarming the campus.
Nearly 37,000 people are confirmed dead in the earthquakes that devastated Turkey and Syria 1 week ago. CBS's MTS Tayyip.
While the sense of rage at Turkey's political rulers is only growing, there are still moments of extraordinary hope. Like when this 13-year-old boy was rescued from the rubble 182 hours after the quake first struck.
New York City police now say one person has died and eight others injured after a U-Haul plowed into people this morning in Brooklyn. WCBS-TV's Lisa Rosner.
At least eight people struck in seven different locations before the NYPD ended the violent rampage.
The patrol got into, you know, in front of the truck, and then the truck got into the sidewalk. Like, he couldn't move anymore.
Sources say he is 62-year-old Wang Sor, born in Malaysia, but a U.S. citizen living in NYC for at least a decade.
Four flying objects have been shot down since February 4th, three of them since Friday, over Alaska, Canada, and Lake Huron. It's not yet known what the most recent flying objects are, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
I just wanted to make sure we address this from the White House. I know there have been questions and concerns about this, but there is no, again, no indication of aliens or extraterrestrial activity with these recent takedowns.
A new report says the teen girls in the U.S. are dealing with high levels of mental health challenges as well as violence. WSB's Sabrina Cupid.
Nearly three in five teenage girls say they feel constantly sad or hopeless. In addition, the CDC's Kathleen Ethier says the report also found that nearly one in five teen girls had experienced sexual violence in the past year.
14% of teen girls had been physically forced to have sex when they did not want to.
And 30% said they had seriously considered suicide. That's up by nearly 60% over the past 10 years.
Ford plans to build a $3.5 billion electric vehicle factory plant, a battery that is, plant about 100 miles west of Detroit that would employ about 2,500 people. This is CBS News.
Paid for by government.com.
Did you hear? A recent stash of $10 gold Liberty coins from the 1800s has been found. These gorgeous gold coins are as bright and shiny as the day they were struck in the late 1800s, and less than 50 of these gold coins are available. Coin experts are calling this gold find an incredible opportunity.
Call 1-800-935-7267,
and you are guaranteed a $10 gold Liberty coin minted by the U.S. Mint in the 1800s. But with extremely limited availability, you must call now. Now, these gold Liberty coins from the 1800s are still in uncirculated condition. That is history you can hold in your hand.
To learn more, call 1-800-935-7267.
Call now and you'll receive a free American Coin Collector's Bonus Package, a $40 value, free with every order.
Call 1-800-935-7267 now
to secure your $10 gold Liberty coins dated from the 1800s before they sell out.
That's 1-800-935-7267.
A rapper's anti-Semitic.
Meet Joe A.
Hi.
Joe B.
Hello.
And Joe C.
What's up?
Three everyday Joes perfecting their banking with Chase. Joe A is locking his lost debit card with the Chase mobile app. Joe B is cruising toward his new ride with AutoSkills. And Joe C's Chase banker is helping him budget to go back to school. Tools that help protect, support for what's next. One bank that puts you in control. Visit chase.com/checking. Chase, make more of what's yours.
Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Messaging and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, NA member FDIC.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. The
The Village of Buren Board of Trustees is holding their public meeting today, February 13th, at 6:30 p.m. at the Municipal Center in Wisconsin Rapids. Following is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Tuesday, February 14th. The Central Wisconsin Joint Airport Board meeting will take place at 8 a.m. at the East Terminal Upper Level in Mosinee. The Wood County Board of Supervisors will meet at 9:30 a.m. at the courthouse in the county boardroom. The Jail Construction Ad Hoc Committee will meet at 10 a.m. at the courthouse in Room 114. The Wisconsin Rapids Human Resources Committee will meet at 2 p.m. in the conference room at City Hall, followed by the Finance and Property Committee at 4 p.m. In Portage County, the Planning and Zoning Committee will meet at 5 p.m. at the Portage County Annex Conference Room 5. In Adams County, the Solid Waste Committee meeting will take place from 4 to 7 p.m. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Clear skies overnight with lows around 30. Southerly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. Scattered rain showers likely. Daytime highs approaching 49. Cloudy tomorrow night. Scattered rain showers likely. Lows level off around 37. About an inch of snow Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 34.
From Alexander Field to the Central Business District, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Jay is a forager of funny tunes that are tangentially connected to the topic at hand. Just never turn Civic Media off.
Just have us on,
all the time. Tell Alexa, just keep it going.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the noon hour, the lunch hour of the show. We have a great show, great hour lined up at 12:30. Carrie Spivak and Daphne Chen, who are investigative reporters for Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, are going to be joining us to talk about a report that they put out last month that was on a landlord you probably haven't heard of before. And it's someone who had over 700 different units by the time he did retire, but 6,800 different claims filed as far as bad environments and evictions and everything. And so we are going to be talking to them about that report and kind of just the underbelly of bad landlords in Milwaukee and what that can do to a neighborhood, what that can do to a community. And so I'm very much looking forward to that. But now we are joined by Arnold. Say your last name for me, Arnold. Syfax. Hold on. Are we up? Great. Arnold Syfax. Great to meet you.
Good to meet you as well.
And so I'm very excited to talk about this because Jane and I have had a couple different guests here to talk about human trafficking in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You are the first man that we have had on to talk about human trafficking and sex trafficking. And that is because you are actually involved in a program called, is it pronounced HEMAD?
HEMAD.
HEMAD. And so tell everyone what HEMAD is.
HEMAD stands for Human Trafficking Education to Men and Boys for the purpose of eradicating the demand for traffickers to pull women, boys, girls, just everyone.
And so it, as a campaign, mm-hmm. how does it work? Is it advertisements? Is it how are you reaching men?
Good question. HEMAD is actually under the auspices of the Conversions Resource Center, which is a center that's geared towards assisting women to get back on track after they have left prison. It actually helps them as well with trauma. And it's kind of a trauma center for women that have been trafficked as well as women that are transitioning. With this organization, Dr. Debbie Lassiter and myself and several others came up with the idea of creating something to educate men on this, because we don't have a lot of men involved in this, because it's not really seen as a tremendously big issue on that end. But we have found that it is a tremendous issue. And the issues are because we're unaware that sex trafficking, it's not, let me put it this way. Some believe that like in Vegas, there is sex being offered, okay? And that's a business. We're not talking about women that are involved in things like that. We're talking about those who have been coerced or forced into this, those that are under the age of 16 that are told they have to do this, and their trafficker kind of romances them, or they might push them into doing this. And it's usually hitting people who are in terrible situations, like runaways or people who are destitute. And sometimes those that are coming over from other countries and they don't have any other way and they're being tricked into it. And then there are those that are just extremely vulnerable in nice areas. Okay. It's not always, you know, the terrible areas where you're pulling people out of there, but this is happening everywhere. It's happening here in Wisconsin in all 72 counties. And because of that, we wanted to get the word out, not only to just boys and girls in high schools and things of that nature, but also to men that are out there, realizing that this is a multi-billion dollar organization.
And because, you know, as we come off the heels of the Super Bowl, I think one thing a lot of people don't realize is the amount of human trafficking that goes into supplying
people
in Arizona yesterday. And so your partner, Debbie, was there, right?
Yes, she was there along with several others, daughters, the Daughters of Destiny, I believe. I can't really think of the name of the organization, but they have kind of gathered together to go out there to do just that. And what they do is find people who have been placed in this that really want to get out and have no other way. So they have a collaboration not only with the officers that are there, but also with the FBI. And what they try to do is find ways of getting them safely away from their traffickers. And they have been successful over the years. Super Bowl is a time for, you know, celebrating this fighting or this battle of men out there on the field. And it seems like the game, who wins, who loses, is really the big piece. But the reality is any type of activity that involves a large group of people, you're going to have traffickers there as well. Traffickers are not your pimps with the big hats and the high heel shoes, okay? Traffickers are the ones in business suits because it's a multi-billion dollar business, and they are selling girls, boys, kids. And some of the biggest transactions take place at events like the Super Bowl.
Yeah. We're talking to Arnold Syfax, who is a board member and leader of HEMAD, of the HEMAD campaign, which asks men to take a stand against human trafficking. And so how did you find yourself involved in this?
Well, this is really interesting because I've been working with Dr. Debbie Lassiter with her organization for years and just trying to assist, trying to help, trying to find financing to assist her in helping women that are transitioning, and to also help them with trauma and things of that nature. So being on the board was kind of a plus because I can talk with philanthropic organizations that have the same mindset. And ideally, we want to be more of an upstream thinker to find ways of not waiting for the problem to happen, but finding ways of trying to cure it. With that in mind, she thought this HEMAD piece would be great to educate men, and she wanted a face for that that was not a woman, so that we can actually go in there as men, as males, face to face, you know, just clear and I'm really trying to watch my words here.
Well, you can't curse, but otherwise we're pretty loose here.
sometimes men will see this as that's really not to say that it's a woman's thing, but I don't believe the push is as strong, woman to man, and maybe it's the society that we live in, maybe it's because of where we are, but man to man, I can go no holds bar on them, you know, and tell them, okay, this is serious and this is why. It hit me back then when I first got involved with this, when HEMAD first became an actual program, when I began to think about my own children, my grandchildren, my aunts, my uncles, and their kids, and just women in general, because I thought it was strictly women that have been trafficked. Well, I come to find out that it's not just women, but it's also men. It's also boys. It's also girls. It's a lot of people, and yeah. Everyone is hit by this in every neighborhood, in every county, and it doesn't make a difference. Again, if you're in the suburbs and in rural areas, everywhere it's being hit. And what we're trying to do is to educate men on what to look for and to have them take a pledge to say that if I see something, I'm going to say something. But also to give them education if they want to go a little bit deeper to find out, so how do I recognize this? How do I see these things? And what exactly is involved in the education of human trafficking? And so with that, we kind of encourage men, and we don't get an awful lot of men jumping on board to say, I need a deep dive in this. But we do get some, and the some that we do get, they're on the ground, and they're moving, and they're letting their peers know and their circles. And so we've hit well over 12 different states, 4 different countries. We just had another country give us a call to say, we'd like to do this as well. We started off trying to get about, 300 or 400 people to take this pledge. It ended up on the first day that we did that, we got 3,000 men to take the pledge. Wow. We went from there the following year. We wanted to double it. We got 6,000 men to take the pledge. And to date, as of today, we have over 65,000 men who have taken this pledge in four different countries, 12 different states, and it's still growing. It's still growing.
Because the goal originally was 75,000. So you moved the goalpost.
So we haven't hit that just yet, but we are still moving for that 75,000. Hasn't gotten there just yet. But it's not just for November kickoff. It's all year round. It has moved from being a particular campaign to being a movement.
Yeah.
And this movement, the importance of it is to make change, is to get those who are able to make the change hear us. And, of course, that comes through numbers. That comes through men taking that pledge and us going to say, hey, listen, we've got over 65,000 men that have taken this pledge. We need to really make some moves on strengthening some policies, making some things a little bit easier, and understanding that this is here, and it's not just out there. It's not next door or should I say down the street. It is next door.
Yeah.
You know, and it could be in your house or in your family, and you just may not be aware of it. Again, trafficking has to do with coercion and force. It doesn't have to do with someone saying, I want to do this. And it's hitting the LGBTQ community. It's hitting runaways. It's hitting everyone.
Absolutely.
And so we want to let men know that we can have a part in this.
So we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I know Jane has a question, but I also want to hear more about what that education actually looks like,
mm-hmm.
and how, in your experience so far, how men are receiving it.
Okay.
As far as... If there's a little bit of denial at first or kind of what that's like. But mm-hmm. our guest this segment is Arnold Syfax, who is a board member and leader of the HEMAD campaign, which asks men to take a stand against human trafficking. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
What we got is beyond all that. You know we got that real thing. Gonna be the object of some hating. But we gonna be all right. We gonna be all right. Making love after every fight. Girl, from the day I put that ring up on your hand, hey. In front of friends and fam, hey. I had a plan, and my plan's to be a good man, good man. Good as all I wanna be, yeah. Son of me, baby, son of me.
Hey everybody, glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to
help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
A tree can be a warrior, battling global challenges with greater courage. A tree can be a solution, cleaning our air, supporting our communities, and protecting our wildlife. A tree can be noble, growing hope in every corner of the world. That's why now is the time for trees. Millions of trees. Join our planting movement at arborday.org.
When a student lacks basic needs like food, clothing, and learning materials, attending school can be a challenge.
And that can make it impossible to thrive.
At Communities in Schools, we address this issue by ensuring that students have everything they need to re-engage in learning,
access to technology and school supplies,
and even emotional support.
By bringing communities of support to students, we're achieving equitable learning conditions.
And that's what Communities in Schools is all about.
Learn more at communitiesinschools.org.
Locally Grown Radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. News, talk, and sports from Vesper to Plover. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry and Jane Madnair. We are talking to Arnold Syfax, who is a board member and leader of HEMAD campaign, which asks men to take a stand against human trafficking. And Jane, I know you had a question.
I do. Arnold, I can only imagine that there's some kind of pushback, because there have to be some men who believe that I'm paying for this.
She's saying that there's men who give pushback because they're saying I'm paying for this.
She wouldn't do this if she didn't want to do it, or he wouldn't do this if he wouldn't want to do it. It's a business transaction. We're all adults here. Everything is fine. How do you address that with these men who want to push back against the fact that some of these people are being forced to do this?
Well, generally, we try to let them know that this is not like a legal thing. If you go to your bachelor party or whatever, and you have these women coming over and they pay XYZ dollars for this, for them to come and do their lap dance or whatever else, letting them know that there are some women that are in this and they were not forced or coerced to be involved in this. What I'm speaking to are those women who have been coerced and forced into this lifestyle. They have traffickers that have told them that this is what you need to do. So what I try to explain to men is that we're not talking about legal. We're talking about the illegal women and men that are involved in this, that have been forced into this by whatever reason, and regardless of the circumstances, that it is not right. And to express to them and let them know that these people that are involved in sex trafficking, they could very well be part of your own family. And trying to really express to them that it is important that we recognize that this is an evil. This is a travesty. This is something that is not a good thing. And yeah, I know I've heard men say, hey, well, we've paid our money to have this person come over and to do this, that, and the other. And I don't want to say that's fine, but I will say if that's a legitimate organization that's doing this, we need to do a deeper dive to find out, okay, are these people being trafficked? We just need to be in the mindset that the possibility is there that these are not people that are willing participants in this act. And so that is kind of what I try to give to men, give some pushback on it. just to let them know that this is a travesty. It is a crime.
And so with that, what are some, as far as the education goes, because I'm sure there's more than we can cover in the next 5 minutes, but what are some of the signs that you tell men to look for as far as being able to be alert and aware of someone who might be there by force, whether that's physical, mental, psychological, or someone who is there who's as a sex worker, or someone who's there because this is their job?
In most cases, you're going to see some signs of bruises. You're going to see some signs in their character that might reflect not just shyness, but paranoia. I mean, there are a variety of things to look for, and without getting too deep in the weeds, we try to bring those that really want to know into the office to give them that full training, because there are different types of traffickers. You need to know what kind of trafficker is trafficking this person, and that will reflect why they respond certain ways. If you see an older man, a young girl out somewhere, and it seems like there's something that's not quite right, we don't say jump over there, get involved, and start questioning. We say keep an eye on it, and if it looks like something that may be, you know, off kilter, there are some numbers that you can call. There are some places that you can contact, and the hotline that's out there, you can call them and say, well, I am suspicious of this particular act because it doesn't look right, it doesn't sound right. And I'm not talking about grandpa out with his niece. I'm talking about something that might look a little bit different. And there are some things that we try to educate them on a face-to-face if they want to get a little bit deeper. Of course, I can't tell you everything to look for because we're not the only ones listening, right? Trust me, traffickers are listening as well. Like, okay, so what are they looking for? So we need to not do that because they're going to know this. So it's kind of difficult to really give you this is what you look for over the radio. It would be a lot easier on a face-to-face, or you can actually go to the site, or you can send an email also to the Conversions Resource Center site. When you go to the Conversions Resource Center site and go right under HEMAD, you can actually email myself or the administrator that takes care of the emails and ask those hard questions and even ask for what to look for. If I have seen something, you know, in my neighborhood that doesn't look right, this is what you can do. These are the numbers you can call.
Absolutely. And so where, with the minute that we have left, where can people, what's the website that people should go to? And we'll put it in today's show notes as well.
You should go to conversionsresourcecenter.org, and it's spelled completely out, no spaces. And then you can go right to HEMAD, which is on that site as well. You hit that. And then we encourage all men to take that pledge that's on there.
You're only 10,000 away from the goal.
Right. And if they want to take that pledge, they can do that online, or I can read it real quick and they can raise their hand right while I'm speaking, and you can insert your name. You can say, I and your name pledge to eradicate or to educate men on the importance of ending human trafficking. We of HEMAD pledge to work to eradicate the business of human trafficking for our women, our men, and for the world. It is my duty not to stand by and let the industry of human trafficking benefit off the backs of the innocent. Therefore, I pledge my heart, my body, my mind, my soul, my spirit to eradicate an industry that seeks to destroy life rather than build it up.
Well, here to that. Arnold Syfax, thank you so much for joining us today. This is very enlightening. We will put all of that information in today's notes. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Always stay humble and kind.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin. Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
What if one day you went to your secret hiding place? You know, that spot that only you know about? And instead of what you came for, you found something a little different. What if instead of your private stash, you found a simple phone number? 1-800-662-HELP. What would you do? Would you stop and give it some thought? Would you make the call? The truth is, all drug use comes with risk. Before those risks become real, before drugs turn your life upside down, before drugs take their toll on you and your family, know that there is help. You can quit. If you or someone you love is struggling with drug use or prescription drug misuse, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, or go to samhsa.gov/thereishelp.
I found hope in the midst of an overwhelming situation.
I let go of trying to control things that I had no control over, and that helped me find peace of mind.
Alcoholism is a disease that can affect any family. Everyone suffers, but there is help and hope at Al-Anon Family Groups.
I was constantly stressed and worried. Now I approach each day with joy and gratitude.
In Al-Anon, families and friends of alcoholics find new ways to heal from the effects of a loved one's drinking.
Al-Anon gave me my life back. I'm a better father and husband.
Are you in an overwhelming situation because of someone else's drinking?
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Local and virtual meetings are available. Maybe one could work for you. For information, call 1-866-200-0033 or visit alanon.org/hope.
If you've been listening, you know you can get your free credit report at annualcreditreport.com. But how do you use it? Paying attention to key pieces of information on the report, including your personal information, open credit accounts, and credit inquiries, can help you not only understand your credit standing and catch any errors, but regularly checking your credit report may also help you identify potential fraud or identity theft. Everyone is entitled to a free credit report from each of the three main credit bureaus once every 12 months. Yet only one in three Wisconsin adults actually obtain the report each year. An easy way to remember to check your report is to simply mark your calendar. Picking dates like February 2nd or 2-2 make it even easier to remember. Go to annualcreditreport.com to get started with your free credit report, and don't forget to keep listening for more tips. This message has been brought to you by the United Way of Southwood and Adams County's Financial Stability Coalition.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. Portage County Executive John Pavelski announced that the social media app TikTok is banned on Portage County government devices. This decision comes after Governor Evers banned the app on state-issued devices, and other Wisconsin County executives have started to follow suit. Executive Pavelski stated in part, "The continued use of TikTok is clearly a potential threat to our cybersecurity and will not be allowed on our county devices. There is very little legitimate need for utilizing TikTok professionally by county employees, so banning use from county devices should be virtually painless." Wisconsin election officials are testing voting machines before next week's primary election. A public voting machine test was held in Madison on Saturday to give voters confidence in the system. Wisconsin voters will narrow the field of state Supreme Court candidates to two. Early voting for the primary is open through Sunday. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Clear skies overnight with lows around 30. Southerly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. Scattered rain showers likely. Daytime highs approaching 49. Cloudy tomorrow night. Scattered rain showers likely. Lows level off around 37. About an inch of snow Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 34.
Reminder that if you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast, which you can find at asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, etc. And so moving on to our guest this half hour. So last month, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel published an investigative report on a landlord who over 20 years became the second largest evictor in the city. He racked up roughly 6,800 building code violations and prompted multiple lawsuits and complaints to state and local officials. But What they also expose is that this isn't an isolated case. And so here to talk more about the impact of landlords, that they what they can do to communities, our guests this half hour are Daphne Chen, who is a data and investigations reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Carrie Spivak, who is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who focuses on white-collar crime, gambling, landlords, slumlords, and other issues. Welcome to the show, guys.
Good to be here.
So I guess let's start with the focal point of the report. Who is Curtis Hoff?
Curtis Hoff is a name that a lot of people didn't know before last month. Yep. Even somebody like Carrie, who has been reporting on landlords in Milwaukee for a very long time. He is the former owner of Anchor Properties and the group of LLCs that owned hundreds of properties across Milwaukee, mostly in Black neighborhoods and low-income neighborhoods. And it's the company that sort of quietly amassed this rental empire and became the second largest evictor in the city. But very much a low-key person here in Milwaukee.
And that was what was wild reading the report, is despite these 6,800 building code violations and other lawsuits, that when you guys started reporting on this, Mayor Johnson didn't even know who he was, despite, and he was on Common Council for how long, as far as no one knew him.
Yeah, that actually was somewhat surprising. You'd think the mayor and former alderman would know who he is. He was known by the building inspectors. We knew who he was. But he didn't get a lot of publicity because he had some other, albeit smaller, slumlords who were getting more attention, like Mohammed Chowdhury and Elijah Mohammed Rashid. Maybe their stuff was more outrageous, but for whatever reason, they were getting more publicity. And Barada, of course, I don't know if we'd call him a slumlord, but he has 8,000 to 9,000 units, so, and he was growing at a, and still is growing at an amazing pace. So all that allowed Hoff to kind of remain in the shadows, and Hoff never went out of his way to get out of the shadows. He didn't even name the company after himself. He used the A names for, well, the reason he used that, as we noted, was back in the day, if you were in eviction court, they would call the companies by alphabetical order of the plaintiffs. So that's why he came up with Anchor, Aardvark, etc. But overall, he was just pretty low key. He's not big on the social scene, not big politically, and just kept out of the way. And did that until we really wrote him up, which unfortunately was after he sold his stuff, though.
I know that is. And now is retired in Phoenix in an almost $1 million house, which is also infuriating. But so paint the picture, because I think, Carrie, was this one of the days I feel like I was in the newsroom and you were just explaining having gone to one. I don't know if it was one of his or just a unit in general, as far as being in some of these apartments and how like the inhumane condition that they were in.
Oh yeah, some of them are just awful. You'll see, you know, the torn windows and screens, and you know, you might be a second story or third story, and there could be little kids there. Holes in the walls. You may not have hot water, outlets that don't work, or then you'll see. Daphne knows this better than I do. They'll overload the outlets, which is causing a fire hazard. Fire alarms that may or may not be there. There was one, this was a Hoff unit that we went to where you had two units. And if I remember right, if both doors open, it blocked off one unit from escaping, which would be god awful in a fire. You kind of get hardened after seeing it so much, but still, it's, you know, it's pretty bad. I mean, it's just, there's no other way to describe it.
Daphne, I mean, obviously, Carrie, you've been doing this for years, but Daphne, was it something for, I mean, you've also been doing this for, because you wrote a report back in 2021 as far as being a part of the investigative team with the taxpayers basically funding slumlords to not fit, that like causing electrical fires and not fixing some of these things. And so have you grown accustomed yet to having to see some of these awful conditions, or is it still something that's a little shocking to walk into?
No, and thanks for mentioning that, because it's a great testament to all the reporting on landlords that a lot of reporters here do really well, the Journal Sentinel. But yeah, like it still was really shocking to see these conditions, especially when children, little children are living in these conditions. And you really get the sense that whoever is, you know, renting these out really does not care to make it habitable or safe. Because we're talking about like giant holes on the porch. Porches, you know, moms describing having to pull kids off of porches and say, you can't play there because you're going to fall and hurt yourself. You know, we've had women talk about having their PTSD triggered because they can't sleep at night because of the sounds of how many rodents there are scrabbling around in the walls. You know, moms crying, like starting to cry while they interview with us and just walking onto the porch so that their kids don't see them. The conditions and how dangerous they were and the effect that they had on the families was really stark to see.
We're talking to Daphne Chen and Carrie Spivak, investigative reporters from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, on their reporting on landlords, specific landlord Curtis Hoff, but also landlords in general who are exploitative? Is that the right word to use as far as how, or predatory? And so can you explain a little bit more about the cycle of both the demographics and the cycle of people who find themselves living in not only anchor properties, but there are, I mean, I think what part of this report was also listing out the 25 top evictors in Milwaukee. And what are some of the reasons why people you've interviewed can't get out of this cycle of living in a slumlord's apartment?
Well, one, you just mentioned the evictions. These guys do not charge cheap rent. People are paying $800, $1,200 for a rental. And you can go in a lot of other neighborhoods and get a much nicer place for the same money. But if you've been evicted, it makes it very tough for you to find a new place. Even if you've been evicted, sued for eviction, and won the case and you were not evicted, unless you get the judge to take that your name to seal the record, that eviction stays on your record. Landlords routinely go to CCAP and they check before they'll rent to you whether you have any evictions. A lot of landlords will not rent to you if you have an eviction. Hoff and some others will rent to you. And they kind of got you locked because you have an eviction. You know it's going to be very tough for you to move out. Maybe you'll complain about the hole in the wall or this and that, and they don't come running out to fix it. But what are you going to do? You can't find another place because you have that eviction hanging over your head. And yeah. That stays on, I believe, for 2 years unless you get the judge to dismiss it.
And just to clarify, it is even in the case where the eviction doesn't go through, but even the attempt to evict you goes on your record.
And that's all they look at. They don't open up the file. You'd have to make a motion to the judge to seal the file. And actually, I'm wrong. I think they stay on pretty much forever unless you get it taken off. So you'd have to get the judge to seal it. If you have an attorney or a legal aid or legal action, they'll do that. But it means another trip to the courthouse, which if you're the working poor, isn't the easiest thing in the world. But, you probably don't even realize it. Unless you have a lawyer, went to legal aid or legal action, you're not even going to realize you could get it off your record.
And to further that comes the reporting of these terrible conditions, right? And that the underreporting of how bad some of these apartments are is because people are afraid of the retribution of getting evicted if they report on their landlord, correct?
Yeah, we detailed a couple of cases where tenants strongly felt that they were retaliated against, that basically, as soon as they reported the issues to the city, to the Department of Neighborhood Services, which is what you're supposed to do, that they were evicted within weeks after that. And we found about 40 cases just looking at the data. Retaliation is very difficult to prove, and it's not something that the city enforces well, but it is illegal. And that just kind of compounds the problems because issues aren't getting reported. People are afraid to be homeless. And on top of that, like, even when they do get reported, we found that enforcement really was a little bit lacking, that, you know, things would be fixed supposedly, but in a shoddy manner, and the problems would just continue.
Is the focal point of the big piece, but he is not the only property owner. He's no one. Now he's retired and he's sold off his property. So who are some of the people kind of on the watch list as far as that are continuing these practices? Like, who did he sell his properties to?
A lot of his properties went to out-of-state landlords, and there's still questions on them. There's been a big influx of out-of-state landlords buying up properties in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee area in specific, in the past few years. Some of them are pretty awful. Some of them not so bad. I don't know if any of them are really great, but, you know, not all are awful. But a lot are being sold on that. It's a good business, a profitable business, especially if you're not putting money into the properties. You're still getting $1,000 a month or so. And if you're not, and, you know, maybe you bought the place, definitely, I'm sure, you know, well under 100, probably closer to 40 or 50. It's not that hard to make money, especially if you're not going to care for it. Yeah. Now, if you can put money into the place and fix it up, you can still make money, probably just not as much. But I've known some landlords, including some of the other staters, who appear to be fixing up the places. You know, they're not, you know, AAA good, but they're definitely livable. And they're making money. So it is possible to make money and be an honest or decent landlord.
So when we come back, I want to talk more about kind of the history of how we got here, that landlords have as much power as they do. Because I know, Carrie, even just last week, you wrote an article on Barada, the number one evictor right now, basically scaring off alderman from off his back. And so there's a certain amount of power landlords have, and I think it dates back to a certain governor and how things and regulations got rolled back for landlords. And so I want to talk a little bit more about the history of that when we come back, and also what could change either legally, locally, or on the state level to strengthen tenant rights. But we are talking to Carrie Spivak and Daphne Chen, investigative reporters from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
His lap up with things he can see, but it just cannot touch. Dear landlord, I'm not about to argue, I'm not about to move to no other place.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a while, Gina Beauclair.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a while, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
I lived alone and was having problems with my landlord. He's a creep. One night I'm watching TV and I hear my landlord letting himself in. Hey, get out! You can't keep coming in.
I'm just here to fix your fridge and spend some time together.
Get out! I'm reporting you.
Don't make a federal case of it.
A federal case? Sexual harassment in housing is against federal law. If you are harassed, file a complaint with HUD. Go to hud.gov/fairhousing. If you fear for your safety, call 911. Fair Housing. The law is on your side. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
I'm a wife and the mother of two kids. And when I get to work in the precinct house and put on my uniform, I can tell you, as a police officer, we're building partnerships.
This should be happening everywhere. So the police should be reaching out to this community. And this community should reach out to the police. That's the way to make this a safer place.
Start the conversation and help stop crime. To learn the five things you can do, go to ncpc.org/preventviolentcrime. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice Assistance.
Hi, I'm Kirsten from Pentatonix. We've all learned how to cope with more time alone. With more time spent isolated or at home, the need for companionship has grown. If you've considered adding a pet to your family, please check with your local shelters and foster organizations. Stray pet numbers have grown immensely over the past several years, and the trauma caused to these animals is devastating. Adopt pets, they need us more than we know. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
From Lake Wazeecha and beyond, your news, talk, and sports is Locally Grown Radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. To the airwaves, the Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are talking to Carrie Spivak and Daphne Chen, investigative reporters from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, about their report from last month, and I guess really spanning back years as far as how long they've been talking about landlords in Milwaukee and specifically predatory landlords. And I guess broadly, how is this legal? Like, how are there so many of these guys, because it seems like a lot of them are guys, that don't have any ramifications for treating people so poorly?
Well, there's a couple of things. Back in around 2010, the legislature, which at the time, stories that I did with Mary Spicuzza, had 20% or so of the legislators were in fact landlords, including Robin Voss, who is a very large landlord.
Wait, Carrie, how many? What?
About 20% of all the legislators were landlords.
No conflict
back
of interest
then. I haven't checked it since then, but my guess is it's still the same. And including Robin Voss, who had 23 properties in mostly in Whitewater, worth about $4 million. And that's when, in about 2010 or so, the legislature passed a series of laws that limited the powers of tenants and increased the powers of landlords. And they, among other things, they limited the amount of fines, where the cities used to be able to continually double the fines and keep inspecting. I believe they outlawed just those surprise targeted inspections that would be real popular in a college town. You would just say, we're going to do this block because, you know, that's where the kids live. But you can do lower income neighborhoods, all that type of thing. So it was kind of the landlord's legislature, and they opened, you know, there were bad landlords before that, but those actions made it tougher for the cities and for tenants to police the landlords.
And that rolls down, right? Since that's the state law, it's not even like the common council in Milwaukee can make laws to get around that.
It's very difficult. I mean, there are things that the city can do and probably should be doing better, but the state laws are really, really restrictive. I mean, one of the things to add to what Carrie was saying was that, Ashanti Hamilton, who was president of the Common Council, told us a lot of the landlords that they dealt with that were negligent, they just kind of pay the fines as part of the cost of doing business, because the state also limits how much the fine is. So when you were asking, you know, how can this be legal? A lot of that equation is just because the enforcement power is so weak.
We started off this show talking about the derailment that just happened in Ohio. And that was the exact same phrase as far as the companies that are profit seeking. It's just they bake that into their budget if they'll have to pay some fines. But it's cheaper to continue to do the unsafe things that they're doing that lead to poisonous materials spreading everywhere than to just incur the fine. And it sounds like it's wild in the same show to hear the exact same thing when we're talking about slumlords. And it's just, well, it's easier to pay the fine than to fix the building.
Absolutely.
And there's one other thing too, is tenants are afraid of being evicted. Many tenants are afraid of complaining because they, even though it's ridiculous, even though it's illegal, they're afraid that the response will be an eviction. And what's gotten very popular in recent years is the 28-day month-to-month lease, where you used to have more and more people signing year-long leases. Now, both around UWM, Marquette, and then in the poor neighborhoods, the month-to-month is real popular. So you don't even need a reason. You just say, I'm not renewing your lease. So tenants are afraid to call the DNS or authorities.
So as far as, speaking of tenants, because I know part of the report was also trying to provide resources for people who, if you are getting evicted, what to do. And so what is available for people as far as resources, organizations, groups, rights?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Milwaukee does have, they create a kind of like what's supposed to be a one-stop shop for like tenants who need help. It's called the Rental Housing Resource Center, and all the sort of legal organizations, government agencies, like nonprofits that deal with landlord-tenant issues are all kind of centralized here. So that would probably be the best stop, first stop. And there are also some more like grassroots organizations, like there's this Milwaukee Autonomous Tenants Union. They're more so kind of a grassroots volunteer organization trying to help tenants organize. So there are resources out there, and they have helped some of the tenants that we wrote about, you know, file lawsuits and things like that. But as far as rights go, it is important for tenants to know that, you know, they have the right to live in a safe, clean space. And especially, you know, if they're paying rent, that's part of the landlord's deal to uphold. And so, you know, if that's not happening, like one right that is afforded by law is rent abatement or rent withholding. And it's not something that's popularized very much by the city. But theoretically, if the landlord is not fixing things that need to be fixed, you can withhold part of your rent through and pay it instead to the city of Milwaukee. And the landlord will not get that money until the fixes are made. But this is kind of a difficult process to go through. It requires approval from the city. But I just say this to say that there are options and renters do have rights.
And so briefly, because we only have 2 minutes left, I guess, is there solutions in reporting this that may not be available right now, but as far as what could help this? Is it only from this at the state level?
I would say that is the biggest thing. Like if you ask experts in housing, they say the gold standard is to basically allow municipalities to once again do systemic rental inspections, proactive rental inspections. But barring that, just at the city level, you know, stuff like I just mentioned, like popularizing that rent abatement program could be really helpful. I know the city of Racine is kind of kicking that off as well in their city. And also just the Common Council, they've been debating for a long time now about things like requiring landlords to have insurance, which experts feel could really help renters, because then when things like fires happen, they really get investigated and we find out if neglect is the root cause of things like that.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to take this opportunity to say thank you for the investigative reporting that you both do, and a plug to be a subscriber to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, because this is the kind of reporting that they do so well. And so this, go read this. I will link it to today's show notes because it is unbelievable reporting. Thank you so much, Carrie and Daphne, for spending time with us and breaking the story down further.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that'll be do it for the noon hour. When we come back, we will be talking about more with the elementary school that is doing a little outdoor work. This is As Goes Wisconsin. You better call if you're interested.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Cynthia and Ed.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, out of the blue, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. And she didn't know whether she should go forward or turn or just stay at the stop sign. She wasn't even really sure where she was at. She was very concerned. It was very unsettling for her.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it, to bring the family in on it. I felt so much better after my son told me, Mom, I don't want you to worry or be afraid. I'll be there for you and we'll figure it out.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Stop surfing.